Welcome back, everyone, to the next edition of the FCC Podcast. This is your host and current commissioner, Kirk Swanner. This podcast will be the recording of our 2024 Summit Series meeting that took place on July 14th. Josh Sutcliffe from CRAA joined to discuss all things CRAA, D1A, D1AA, and more. Enjoy. Welcome, everyone, to our second Summit Series. Today, we got joining us Mr. Josh Sutcliffe for CRAA. Josh, how you doing, sir? Josh, you there?
Yeah, sorry about that. I'm just in a car. I was trying to turn a rental car, so excuse the delay, but I'm here.
You need a couple minutes?
No, I'm good. I'm just going to drive around while we do the call.
All right. Well, yeah, so the last meeting we talked about, just kind of recapping the season, where we're trying to go for the future. There's a lot of questions that took place. Massey, we got two people joining us. We'll give them a sec. So for Massey and Gavin, we are literally just starting. So, a lot of the conversations we had last week revolved around playoffs and all that type of stuff. I'm sure you have plenty of conversations about that type of stuff, Josh. So really just want to thank you for joining us on the call today. I get a lot of questions from the guys, you know, about CRAA and all sorts of stuff. So really wanted everyone to have a chance to ask their questions directly to you, Josh. And so anybody have any questions or Josh, you want to talk about what the playoff current negotiations are looking like for spring of 25?
Yeah, I'm happy to answer any questions. Right now we're trying to finalize the details of exactly where the championship weekend will be in the spring. We had a 3-year contract with Houston, and obviously at the end of that 3 years, we reevaluate and we look at other options. So we're going through that process of looking at it and looking at different options for that. We should have that finalized in the next week or so. We're just waiting on some requests for proposals for there. And that will either happen. We're hoping that that will happen on the same weekend, which is the first weekend of May, but it might get pushed forward to the last weekend of April. So that's what we're looking at from the championship weekend. Obviously, part of the conversation on here is which teams want to be considered for the national D1AA championship playoff pathway. This year, last year we were still able to play games on back-to-back days, which they did in the Western region. This year, World Rugby, they put out a guideline last year that you have to have 4 clear days between matches. And that's something that CRAA will be honoring during the playoff pathway. So we're looking at options for what that playoff pathway would be. The teams will be involved in that. We're going to send out hey, here are some options. Give us feedback on those options so we can see what the teams want to do in the playoff and if they want to nominate for it. Florida in the last couple of years have chosen to go straight to bowl games. And that's also an option that we would like to offer. One of the options is that there are bowl games and the national championship game will be based on an algorithm. And then there will be some other options where higher seed hosts based on a similar algorithm that the D1A teams use. So I'll start there and I'm happy to answer any questions as we move along.
Real quick, Josh. So, I mean, kind of what happened last year was that the ACR conferences came under the CRAA banner, but they were kind of able to operate still as their own quasi standalone entity. Is that correct? Assessment correct from last year?
Yes. And they worked in liaison with me, but they, as far as collecting of dues and stuff, they went to separate bank accounts. This year, everyone's under one umbrella of D1AA under CRAA. And so that was, last year was sort of the alignment year, and this year we're working together completely.
So the D1AA National Championship was really the ACR conferences bringing over their historical format into the CRAA banner, right?
Yes. And it was something that the California conference wanted to join.
And they jumped into it, right?
Yep. So but the teams that wanted to be a part of it, they were a part of it, and we went from there.
We had a convert. There was a call with the D1AA conferences. I don't know what, 4 weeks ago now, 3 weeks ago. And so in that conversation, no decision was really made. There's a lot of chatter going on about championship pathway versus bowl games. Has there been any more conversation since then? Because I haven't heard anything personally.
No, we haven't had conversations because I was hoping to send it out once we had a date. As that's gotten pushed for various and sundry reasons, mostly because of July 4th and things just got backed up in terms of the grounds we were potentially talking to. We didn't have a date, so we wanted to, when we send it out, we wanted to have dates, but probably what I'll do is send it out to the commissioners and also to the coaches so they can all see it. These are the options. What do you want to be involved in? Give us feedback on it, and we'll finalize that as soon as we can.
Floor is open, Jens. Any questions out there?
Yeah, I'll throw one out. Hey, Josh, thanks for jumping on. A little impromptu and to put you on the spot, but can you like kind of give us like a state of the union, maybe? Like, what is your impression on the league and, you know, how things are or where we're going, something like that?
State of the union as in CRAA. So sort of CRAA, we want to work to build the competition. So D1A would be what we would call our performance level of competition. D1AA is our development. We want to create robust pathways for them. We want to create opportunities for connection to the national team coaches. Right now, we are working with the pathway coaches and the national team coaches on creating a coach development calendar where we're trying to aim to have at least a call monthly during the fall semester and a call monthly during the spring semester where the coaches of D1A and D1AA can jump on a call, listen to information coming from national team coaching staff, and then potentially ask questions just depending on how long the presentation goes for. Some will be longer, some will be shorter than others. We're also looking at our fall classic. And right now this is, we have just started this conversation. Heart of America wants to develop a conference all-star type team. We are looking at the Fall Classic potentially as a date for that. With them, if Florida Collegiate Conference was looking at developing an all-star team, we want to be able to support that and showcase it at one of our major events. Right now, the Fall Classic looks like it could be a good opportunity. But once again, you're hearing it very much in a very raw ideation sort of format because these ideas, we're trying to be responsive to the ideas that are coming to us. So sort of from a D1AA perspective, what we're looking for is create great opportunities to compete within the conferences and then create crossover opportunities, whether those are bowl games at the Fall Classic, bowl games at the Spring Championship game, and then in other areas of the country and hopefully in the future in Florida. Obviously, y'all are in a different geographic location, but we're trying to create this hybrid link between our D1A and D1AA teams to make sure that we're getting more games of 15s, that they're of competitive level, and that players are growing through competing. And that's one of our really big things. I think last year, what we saw with ACR and CRAA at the D1AA level coming together, we had a number of pretty high quality games. And obviously y'all sent St. Thomas to the championship weekend and they did beat a D1A side in Air Force Academy. And, you know, the games that we streamed were very well received. D1AA, that group of commissioners, will have the ability to potentially set a sevens calendar or set a sevens date for a championship. We want to make sure that each division, so men's D1A, men's D1AA, women's D1, women's D1 Elite, if they want to have some autonomy to create their own schedules and do those things. We want them to have that flexibility. It's the same reason why D1A and D1AA have different eligibility criteria. And that's sort of driven by the commissioners of each of those divisions. And that way we can stay as responsive as we can to the needs of the members that we're serving. I don't know if that answered your question, but
I'm
happy to.
Bit of feedback you've given me a couple of times, Josh, but I feel like the rest of the conference needs to hear it, is the quality of the bowl game. So like the bowl games where it's a good idea, it's probably been lacking in execution. So the quality of some of the bowl games, not, you know, like some of the teams that have been sent out there, not as high as it possibly could have been.
Yeah. And I fully understand that they fall on difficult weekends. Probably we haven't always had the strongest team. This is based on talking to the coaches and those sorts of things. We would love to see the best team showcase, so when we put it on TRN and when we pay for the production, that it's a high quality match between the best that each team has to offer or each college has to offer. And one of the reasons why, and this is coming direct from our sponsors, they want to sponsor these high quality games. They want to put a name on the bowl games. A couple of years ago, we had Arctic and World Rugby Shop. They were close to coming on board again this year, but we want to make sure we solidify some of these bowl games so we can get sponsors and we can get more eyes on it, and we can make it a better product for everyone.
So like the bowl game, so as far as D1AA postseason goes, still quite in the air as far as if it's going to be, there's one option where it could be all bowl games, no pathways, and the championship is based on an algorithm, right? Like you have matchups and one of them is like you take your two best teams based on algorithm rankings and you put them in a game together and call it a national championship. Another option is where you keep the same structure that you have with like a quote, you know, national championship pathway, which will start sometime in mid-March or something. But now there's the 230-minute limit on a weekend, right? Like you, a full 80-minute match has to have 4 days in between it. So if you are going to try to do two matches on one weekend, you either have to run two shorter games or one 50-minute, one 80-minute match, and there's no ability to go into extra time in the event of a tie.
Correct. It would go straight to a kickoff.
Drop goal kickoff.
Either the drop goal or it would be the place kick. That would also be voted on, right? The place kick, which was used in the European Cup, which was like
basically a shootout.
Yeah. Straight to basically a penalty goal shootout. Yep.
So both options are on the table. Which way it goes, unsure at the moment. But the lack of execution in bowl games are not helping that. And there's also the ACR programs don't really fully buy into it yet, right?
Right. And more of them liked what they saw last year. The feedback from the ACR teams, they had a great time there. They're interested in doing that. And so I think now that it's sort of a concept that we've shown that we want to produce these games and produce them to a high level, as far as the broadcast goes, we would like to then have the teams come and compete and create these crossovers between, you know, it's great to see Sam Houston play UF, right? It would be great to see different parts of the country because plan for their travel to one place. And then we can get these crossover games, which can have a little bit of, I don't know, historic rivalry, or maybe it's a football rivalry or whatever that happens to be. And we can do it justice from a production perspective as well.
So on that point, yeah, because I actually want to ask a question. Justice on a production standpoint. So when you talk about that, you're talking about a three-camera shoot, right? Because on that call with ACR, that was the one thing Sentinelli kept talking about was, you know, anytime we broadcast, it's a three-camera shoot, right?
Yeah, for anything that's on TRN, it's a three-camera shoot. We're also investigating, and this is something that we want to be able to do to support more games having better streaming quality, is create a one-camera setup that we can potentially send to colleges that they can do it from a pitch side with one camera and potentially do their own commentary there and stream that through YouTube. So that's something that we're trying to look at and see if we can promote it. At the moment, we've sort of sussed out most of the technology. We used it to stream the Sevens up at Western Washington on May 17 and 18 last year. And so we think we've got something. We just need to work on the height of the camera and potentially a PTZ that works more effectively for a sort of a one camera setup. So we can try and get, I guess, more marketing, more of those things to the team so you can show out a little bit more.
Because one of the questions I had was like, instead of trying to do completely centralized championship weekend, you could potentially do bowl games as a curtain raiser at MLR matches, right? Like if we're going to plan this out ahead of time, we could look at what the MLR schedule looks like and have bowl games go there. But the kickback was three camera setup. So how much is a three camera setup?
It would depend on the location. But normally I'd have to check per game, and it would also be dependent on the stadium that we were doing it from as well. Whether we could tap into their sort of camera and streaming stuff, or whether we would have to pay for something separate. I will get those numbers for you. I don't have them off the top of my head. I believe a three camera setup is about $8,000 for one game. That's what I believe it is, but please don't hold me to that number. I will get you a number for it that's far more specific.
What about the one camera shoot for the Western Washington Sevens? You know, the pitch side you guys sussed out. How much does that roughly cost?
So we bought the stuff. So we actually have the ability to produce that from pitch side. It's now we've got to figure out. At Western Washington, we had the stands to shoot off. So we had that elevation. So it would just be finding that elevation and then paying for the camera person and also for someone to produce it pitch side, whether that's me or whether we send out the instructions and someone can do it pitch side. It's very straightforward. That camera setup cost us $2,000 or $3,000. $3,000 once we added the cameras to it. It's about a $3,500-$4,000 setup. I think we picked up some cameras and then we can send them out to different places.
So basically a high pod that you then plug into a streaming service that you can then have commentators on.
Yep.
Okay. So we basically do that now in Florida for all of our matches. We have a company that we outsource that they stream all of our games. So, anybody else have any questions? One question I get quite a bit is the team fee. So, you know, to be a part of a CRAA, there is a $400 team fee and there's a $15 per player fee. You know, what are all the costs? Like how much did the bowl game cost, the two Florida bowl games? How much did that cost at the championship weekend and all that type of stuff? I get so many money questions and I'm surprised no one's asking them now.
Yeah.
I have yet to see the numbers. I mean, you guys sent me some numbers last summer, and I don't know. I didn't really get a grasp of what it was. I don't feel like I've ever seen numbers. Like how much did Houston cost CRA to run this past year, or how much did the bowl games of that cost?
Yeah. And that's the breakdown that we are still working on at the moment, because we had the production cost. We've just had the referees cost come in, and we have to pass out the Sevens referees cost, which is quite high because you need so many more referees, and then look at the production breakdown after that. I don't have those numbers off the top of my head. And that's just because I haven't actually seen them yet. As soon as I get them, I will share them with you. And we can talk about those at another time. Like, not trying to hide anything, I just don't have them in front of me because they haven't been all reconciled as we work our way through the different vendors and referee fees and that sort of stuff coming in. After the fact, the reconciliation with the SaberCats and the cost services and making sure we break out. Like, for instance, we had a delay in the women's game, which ended up making some of the stuff cost significantly more because they had to keep staff on for longer. And it was like a 4-hour delay. So we want to make sure that we understand what we got billed for and take out the things and make sure we don't just split it for what those were. So I don't have those at the moment. I'm working on getting them for you. I knew you were going to ask the question.
How much staff does CRA have? Like how many paid staff does CRA have
CRA on doesn't have paid staff. The Santinelli, Keela, Olivia, myself, Emily, we do as volunteers. I'm now employed by USA Rugby. That's a very recent development. I'm paid by USA Rugby to help support college in my role there, but both in membership and some of the ambitions that USA Rugby has to support college rugby across the place. But the money that comes in goes to pay for championship services that we need to keep the division going. So there's championship money that comes in. There are, you know, fees for website and accounting and the general business and operations of running. Some of the money goes to paying for the services that come down to eligibility. And so, yeah, those are some of the things that it covers. It doesn't go to covering my wage. It doesn't go to covering anyone else's wage. Yeah, it goes back into the experiences for the students.
Yeah. So Santinelli, so Paul Keeler is the president and he's a volunteer.
Paul Keeler is the chair of the executive committee. Paul Santinelli is the men's director and the commissioner for D1AA. D1A, and I'm the commissioner for D1AA and D2. Okay. That's the men's side. And then on the women's side, Olivia is the women's director and the D1 commissioner. Emily Agata is the D2 commissioner. Santinelli also oversees women's D1 elite on the women's side.
And so then when you talk about services, you're talking about Amanda Cox does the eligibility reviews. So like that is actually every time we submit, there's a paid position. I mean, that is a paid service there. So is that, are we paying, is that CRA paying by team? Is it by, you know, eligibility waiver? Like how, I mean, if she's not, if you're not invoicing her for independent individual thing, like how is that not just a wage?
I believe it's a contract position.
Okay.
And I do not know the details of that. I don't ask about other people's contracts.
Last year, the waivers took forever last year. What's going to be different this year?
So a couple things that are going to be different. One, I'm going to see all the waivers that are coming in. I have purview to it. And so if something's taking too long, I will be a part of that process. So I will see it coming in. So it should be a much more streamlined process, and also being able to communicate directly with those adjudicating, I can speed up that process. So, we will not have the delays that we had this year. And if you do, you call me and you get on my ass. So,
can I get some comments from folks about the eligibility process? Like how easy or difficult do you find it? You know, cause like there's a form that then links to another form that then links somewhere else and this and that, like a couple of people put in eligibility waivers. Can we get some feedback on that?
So can you hear me? This is Ken.
Okay.
UF.
Yeah.
So where we got in trouble last year was we went to the USA website and signed up from CRA there and just submitted the waivers and all that stuff. And it turns out that was not the right way to go. It wasn't for CRAA. It was for collegiate eligibility on USA, but it wasn't the right format. So we'd submitted waivers to the wrong email. And thankfully, I forget her name, Amanda, is that her name? She did a great job of explaining what happened and got me the right information. But hoping that's fixed, but I didn't think the process was too bad as far as getting the waivers. I think the real problem is trying to get the eligibility paperwork in within the first 2 to 3 weeks of school. It's very tough to make sure that all the paperwork's in and approved before the first game because we start so soon in the season at the school starts.
So, Ken, you went to the USA Rugby website, and that linked you somewhere else, which is not the appropriate.
Correct. I don't know if that's been fixed yet or not.
All right. I know that, like, when I looked at the CRAA, you know.
What time should I tell them to leave?
Diego, you're on mute, buddy. Mute yourself.
Oh, sorry.
When I went to the form, it then linked me to another. I mean, are you guys basically using a Google form? Is that where they fill in the information? Or do they need to be, like, filling out a form and scanning it, signing it, and sending it in? And can we please – are unofficial transcripts acceptable? And if they are, can you please change the damn form so it doesn't make everyone think they have to go spend money on official transcript?
Yeah, so it gets – there's a Google form on the – so you download the forms, you fill them out. You don't have to – download them, write them in pen. You can fill them out. You do have to submit them on the Google form currently on the CRAA.rugby website, which is under the resources link. There is a Google form there under resources. That's where you submit it. If you want to email, it's eligibility@CRAA.rugby. And that will also go through, but we want all the forms coming through the Google form. Because then we can see when they come in, and that gives us a better paper record for all of those things. And then we are exploring right now, and this is something that's happening in conjunction with USA Rugby. We are exploring how to do all this through Rugby Explorer, which we believe will streamline everything, and that way you don't have to fill out extra stuff. You can submit unofficial transcripts. We accept them. We won't change the paperwork because if we have to follow up and request an official transcript, if it doesn't show enough, we keep that on there to be able to have a follow-up request if that is necessary. But your unofficial transcript, 99.9% of the time, is enough to be able to make the adjudication.
Great. Can we just make that clear? Because I think this year alone, there was like, six people that were waiting on an official transcript when it was like, hey, you need to get your waiver in, print off your unofficial and send it in.
Yep. Just get an unofficial, send it in, submit it. If we need something more, we will request it from you. And I think that was one of the other things, and I was following a couple of the cases. One of the other things is a lot of people submitted without sort of a supporting why, even if it's just a paragraph of a letter, just sending that paragraph of a letter to be able to explain why you're submitting this waiver is something that they do require.
Explanation along with it.
Yeah. Yep. Like not just I'm a grad student. It's like I'm a grad student in my fifth year playing or whatever it happens to be. For some of you still might get COVID waivers, right? Like there's eligibility that's been extended to people. So I think this will be the last year.
Floor's open, gents. Any questions that you've been dying to ask CRAA? Now's your chance to ask Josh. Maybe he'll send it up the chain if he needs to.
Not necessarily a question, but just if we're on the eligibility topic, just kind of the sentiment I felt. It just kind of felt really arbitrary. Like you just sent your thing on Google Form or whatever, and that was it. When we used to have Florida has a paid ad administrator again, but in the past when we had a different paid administrator, eligibility was like completely transparent. We were able to see what every team submitted, and Evan, our administrator, were like color coded, like green, this guy's good, yellow, hey, this guy's a maybe, and here's his waiver, or red, like this guy, there's no way this guy, you know, should be playing. If we're paying CRAA for these services, is this a product that we could be receiving like we have in the past? Because otherwise, it just feels like why are we even doing this?
Your point is that, like, when someone submits a team roster, you know, you can't really see them unless, because right now we have an internal process where everyone goes and posts them on a Google Drive. So you can go look it up there. Whereas previously, that you could just go to like our web, the FRU website, and he would color coordinate who was good and who needed a waiver and who was denied.
Yes.
So would it be helpful for you all to have that Google sheet that you can keep in your Google folder where you submit everything else that we update and push information to?
Well, I mean, what are the capabilities on Rugby Explorer that you guys are looking into?
So, yeah. So what we're looking into on Rugby Explorer, so Rugby Explorer was built in Australia, and they have a dispensation system. So we're seeing if we can leverage that for our eligibility. So that's what we're talking about. It should work by all theoretical things. So we're going to move into like a testing phase to see if it actually works. If it does, then it will show people as, if it works the way it's supposed to, if someone gets denied for a waiver, they won't be able to be added to that team. And then you won't be able to submit that to the team list, which is part of Rugby Explorer's competition management system. I don't know if you all used that down in Florida last year, but that's what we want to be able to have the teams on.
I mandated that they use Rugby Explorer with all the team lists and everything. And we were supposed to do first games, first grade and second grade.
So you can
use Rugby Explorer for dispensation for waivers, but there's nothing there as far as transparency on the actual roster, like verifying the eligibility roster against the playing roster.
Not currently, but if we do dispensation through it, that's how it would happen, because you wouldn't be able to add that person to the team while they're waiver was processing, and then if they were denied, they wouldn't be able to be added to that roster.
So any player can still register to any team, and until something gets caught, they'll be able to play. It's only until they're caught. Like, I don't understand how that process works, because dispensation means you're allowed to play, but there's no ability to prevent them from playing other than something coming up, and then you can just prevent them from being able to play, but it's not something that triggers automatically protecting the team. It is only done after the fact.
That's the way it would initially be implemented. There is another process that comes along with it. And once again, I'm just starting the exploration process. I've just started talking to Rugby Explorer. There is a possibility that, you know, the FCC, until they get their waivers in and they're approved, no one could be added to the team. And it's only those who are approved that are added to the team. So it's once that registrar's form comes in that they get added to the team, and they get the permission checked off. So this is the way longer term it might work. But in the initial, it would be a post-action rather than a beforehand action. But longer term, we would have you submit. And once we receive that waiver and confirmation from the registrar, then you would be able to be selected for it. Now, the question would be, in the case of for a regular sort of junior or senior team, you only need to do that once. Our problem is for the semester schools, you need to be able to do that twice. So we need to find a way around that before we were to implement that from a just from the CMS standpoint.
You need to do it twice, because if you're playing competitive sevens or some other competitive game in the fall semester, you then have to do it again for the spring semester. But if there's nothing that's competitive nature happening in, say, the fall semester, you don't really have to do it then.
Yes. Yeah. So those are some of the things that are unique to the sort of American collegiate landscape that we're trying to work through with developers who don't, you know, like, they just have to try and figure out how to do this for us.
Are other conferences and teams having issues with eligibility, particularly getting it in the team roster approved by the registrar in the first couple of weeks? Or is that mostly at D1AA, or is that also happening at D1A?
When are your first games?
We typically get back into school either the second week of January, and we usually play on the fourth weekend or fifth weekend.
Yeah, I think D1A's spring date is actually in February, because they've had some issues, and it might depend, and this would be up to your conference to decide If you want to go with that later date to give the extra week, but knowing that your first week, we haven't checked it, that would be the sort of conversation that could happen. Because I know for D1A, and I'd have to double check it, I think it was a weekend in February. I think it was first weekend of February that was their date for eligibility submission.
The games will happen before that, but once that date happened, like, you had to have all your eligibility documents in on that date or else you can't play.
Yeah.
So, but there'll be games ahead of time, and as long as the players come back eligible, they're fine. But if they came back ineligible,
yeah,
something might happen.
Yeah.
All right.
And I think this is one of the things. It's not perfect. If a player has problems with grades in the fall, obviously that's the big threat sometimes. Sometimes they don't register for as many classes in the spring. Those are the two big ones that sometimes happen. It's just something to be aware of. If you want to submit it before then, that's totally fine. But I do know D1A has that slightly later date. And I think in our handbook, that date matches the D1A dates as well.
Anybody else got questions on eligibility, documentation, yada, yada, yada?
Yeah, this is Ken again. So you asked, they will not do that roster. And it seems like what we submitted has been working okay. I just wanted to make sure that we're okay. What we do is we get a proof of enrollment from the registrar for each student, and then we do a proof of their graduation date by a copy of a diploma or something. And that so far seems to have worked. Is there anything else we need to do to be sure we're good?
So Josh, if you're not sure what he's talking about, UF, their registrar refuses to sign that team registrar form. And so what they do is they have all their players basically collect all their high school graduation information, and they have them all print off their class schedule and their profile. And they basically make all the players collect all the information they need. And it's like this huge info dump that somebody has to go through and double check all their roster.
So there's two ways that you can deal with this. My preference would be that you have your club sports director sign a letter in lieu of the registrar, and I can find a form template for you to do that. And then the club sports director would be the one who can go through that dump of information and verify that everyone's eligible. The other option is myself or Kirk has to go through it, which would be a nightmare. So my preference is.
We do try and keep it set. We do give you a summary sheet that makes it, hopefully makes it easier and put them in order, but it's still a pain.
Yeah. The preference is for a club sports director or whoever's in charge of your club sports assignment. Part of that is to tie it back to the university and make sure we have someone from the university who has oversight. There are a number of schools where the registrar will not sign this paperwork, and that is the preferred way to manage that situation.
Okay. All right, Peter, we'll talk about that in our meeting next week, all right?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something I can talk with Jason with as well. I'm sure that he would be good doing that as long as we have all our information and it's solid.
Yeah, let him do the dirty work. Okay, good.
Anybody else got some questions? The Fall Classic, Josh, that is mostly for there's what, a couple of D1A conferences, one D1A conference that's kind of fall based 15s. And that's like, who's the Fall Classic for? How about a better question there? What's the typical programming at the Fall Classic?
So the Fall Classic has been for bowl games between conferences, right? So to be able to give them sort of an end of the fall way to play, either some traditional rivalry games, Penn State has played Ohio State, Arkansas State is really gearing up. I'm not sure if this game's going to happen, but Arkansas State really wants to play Mount St. Mary's. So some of the Rugby East teams coming to play some of the teams from the Midwest. And so they all converge in the same spot. This is going to be in Spartanburg, South Carolina. I think it's called Upstate University. Is that correct? I don't know. I might be wrong on the name, but it's in Spartanburg. It's going to be the first full weekend of December, which is kind of funky this year. I think it's December 7th and 8th. That is also the date that we may target to have Conference All-Stars. And that would be the date where we want to send it out, and you're one of the first two sort of conferences that we're chatting to if Conference All-Stars is a concept you want to have. The other thing is D1AA teams, if you want to be a part of that fall classic, we would love to have games in the fall there, come across, see if we can have teams from different conferences, whether that's from the Heart of America Conference. I think Iowa State might be potentially looking for a game there this year. Maybe it's a D1A team. And so it's the schools, and we want to get this nomination process to happen quite early. It's to sort of stick your hand up and say that you want to travel. And once you commit to that travel, we put on a bowl game for you there. We are looking at women's games, and it's all 15s, women's games, D1A games, and we would love to have some D1AA games there too.
First weekend December, when is it?
Yeah, December 7th, I think, is the date. Whether that's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, or just Friday, Saturday, it will depend on the docket that we have of games.
Okay. What happened with the CRAA or sorry, yeah, CRAA sevens event that was supposed to take place the first weekend of June this year?
Yeah, I can explain that one. What happened was the men's D1A teams chose not to play sevens. They said they in early commitments they said the first weekend of June was their preference. When they asked for teams that would be available, they had, I think it was upwards of 30 teams that said they would potentially come to it. When they asked them to commit to it, six teams responded positively, and that's why it was cancelled. From that experience, we have made the assessment that June is way too far after the season to do something like that. So as far as a sevens event goes, there's a couple of options that are being looked at for this. Potentially a sevens event will happen the same weekend as the 15s championship at the same location. So that is one of the things that is being considered as we pick this location. That's why we're looking for the right location, because we would need at least three fields if we go ahead with men's sevens, women's sevens, and the 15s championship games. So that is a possibility for what we're looking to do for sevens instead. And that way, all of CRAA rugby finishes on the same date.
So that's basically the same. That's basically the same format as it was 2 years ago, like
Yes.
when we went to Houston. You guys had sevens on two separate fields outside the stadium.
Add the
Yeah.
women's. Add the women's. That was not there 2 years ago, but it was there a lot this past year.
And what we would look to do is sort of similar to what the women did this year. We would have a premier bracket and would have a club bracket. And the club bracket sort of would be the D1 AA and D2 teams if they wanted to qualify for it. And the premier bracket would be the D1A teams and any D1AA teams that wanted to nominate themselves and go through that bid process to go there. So
How much does the third field throw a wrench in securing a location?
Houston, we can do it. We don't the It doesn't throw the biggest wrench. It's just that there has been a couple of potential contenders sort of reach out to us and court us. I don't want to say who it is just because the field might not be up and ready for that period, and it might be something we do in the future. So there's just a couple of things that there's a couple of people who have come to us, so we want to investigate those things at the moment.
So yeah, because one of the issues I could see is going to be programming. It's trying to get all that stuff into one space on one weekend. Therefore, like, wouldn't decentralizing some of the stuff, like maybe putting a couple of these bowl games at as a curtain raiser for some of these, like an MLR match, like be helpful because it'll help alleviate some of the stress at the single event. But yeah, then you have the issue of, is a single camera streaming on YouTube acceptable as opposed to being on the Rugby Network?
Yeah, and I think, and then the other aspect is, what is it, will MLR teams work with us on those dates, and does decentralizing it and getting referees and the other pieces that go around it, are we able of executing the event in conjunction with them? So
right, because the first
week has not been ignored. It just, the conversation hasn't progressed with the stage that the MLR teams are in at the moment. It's sort of been tabled because it's not an immediate potential thing that we can execute.
Because one of the issues you're going to have is the first weekend of May is also the adult like super regional weekend as well?
It's one of them. It's like the club champion. Early rounds.
Yeah, so I think that's the same weekend as like the Vegas super regional, the Gulf Coast. And so you have like four adult events all happening at the same time that suck up refs, and you have the college event sucking up refs. So you're going to get pretty light numbers pretty quick, but MLR has three refs on the weekend. So, you know, they got two guys with this AR that could easily pick up a match ahead of time if we need to. But
Kirk, if rugby was sensible about our resources and how to use them, my job would be much easier.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, we're 50 minutes in. Gents, any more questions? Here's your chance. Don't ask me questions next year about money or this or that or whatever when you have your chance to do it now.
Hey, I have one question for y'all. As far as like promoting players to national teams or to that pathway, is that something that your teams want to do? Is that something you aspire to do? This is information for me. Obviously, we have heard and we want to do coach development with you all and make sure that you have access to be able to hear the information that our national team coaches are sort of working through and some of that stuff. But I know, one of the reasons I'm asking, I've talked to Gomez in the past about sort of players and that sort of stuff. What does that look like for you all? What are the aspirations for you as coaches, for your players and for yourselves? That sort of thing. And this is just so I can hear from you.
This is Sean from USF. Short answer is yes. We've had a few guys and in the recent, like post COVID, that definitely have the talent and should be being built into a pathway to, you know, a potential to go to the professional ranks. We have three guys from our teams the last couple of years who actually left the country to go. So one's on the Rugby Connect. Two of them are on Rugby Connect. They're in Australia right now. One of them went to Italy. And then we've had some others, you know, here and there. But it would be nice, you know, towards the end of their college career here, you know, D1A doesn't get as much recognition as D1, but there's a lot of hidden talent in our leagues. And sometimes you get some really special players that get sort of overlooked and ignored. And sometimes they go the USA Rugby South route, and, you know, sometimes that helps and sometimes it's not so helpful. And it'd be great to have that avenue for them to try to pursue something with rugby.
And Sean, just as a follow up to that, would obviously there's money that has to come into it, but would an FCC all-star team playing in either a fall classic or something in the early summertime, is that something that the conference or people are interested in? Is that something we should explore or not?
From UF, I say yes.
But Ken, you say yes to everything. So, like, we got to take your answer with a grain of salt.
Yeah, well, thing is, the feedback I got from when we had an FCC All-Star trip, where you guys went to New Orleans, the feedback I got from the players was awesome. And I've been disappointed that we haven't been able to do that since. But I just understand logistics are really tough and all that stuff. But yes, if there was a way to make it happen that was made sense and people knew about it as a planet, I think you'd find athletes that are not getting looked at or seen by anyone.
So from a programming perspective, there's kind of two options in here, right? One is the fall classic route they're talking about, which would be early December. So it'll be during the school year, it'd be before our competitive season. The other option is we do it like late spring, early summer, which is outside, you know, like after the competitive season is over, but it's outside the school time. So like, and they have various challenges, you know, so like if, you know, my favorite thing previously was the old LAU tournament, and then you also had the TU tournaments. The LAU tournament has always took place in the fall, from what I remember, with Florida when they would play Georgia and the Carolinas and all that. And then the TU tournament is always in the summertime. So, you know, it sounds like they're bringing back the fall classic, but that's probably more at the territorial level, not the local area union level. But we don't have those anymore. They only have geographic unions. Anybody else? Comments? FCC, fall classic? Summertime.
I think, you know, both those are good routes, but I think if we're talking pathways, Josh, like just camps. If that's available, like Spartanburg, South Carolina, like if you guys are thinking that as some central location, like if just in December, you know, all the teams in Florida could send those four or five guys just to be looked at for scouting, and then they could get honest feedback from an evaluator, from a coach, and be like, this is the skill you need to work on. I think realistically that's probably the best thing I would push players for, would be to attend some sort of scouting or selection camp.
Hey, Ken, can you mute your phone, buddy, please?
Sorry.
So you're saying that we could do that. The other option is that you go to a Sharks identification camp, or
if we're talking pathways, yes.
Diego, get your hand up.
So, just like pertaining to the Fall Classic, earlier you talked about like the bowl games. I feel like to help grow this conference and the level within the conference, a lot of those games of playing those teams from outside of Florida helps a lot of these teams get better. So that maybe that's a good opportunity for teams themselves to go and play a bowl style game like we did at the end of this year, which I think we definitely learned a lot from. But also the idea of having a Florida All-Star team. I mean, a lot of – if you got the Rugby Network – if it's on the Rugby Network, it's also going to – a lot of people are watching. So it's really good, too. I like both of them.
Yeah, so Josh, I guess how many teams can we send to the Fall Classic? What if all of us put our hands up? How are you picking?
That's a great question. It depends on the date. So if we can create compelling matchups – I think the max games we can have over the course of the weekend is four per day on Saturday and Sunday. And I think the max we can have is two on Friday. And so we know we've slotted, and we will announce it soon, at least one women's game there. And so from a D1AA perspective, I think we could look at two, potentially as high as three, but we'd want like sort of firm commitments and make sure that we pull off what I want to say are appropriately competitive games that turn into absolute bangers.
No more duds. Basically, the feedback I'm hearing, gents, and I hope you're hearing it as well, is that when we do go to the national level, like you can't take these subpar teams. If you're going to take a subpar team, you're almost better off not going. Josh,
well, December 7th isn't a graduation date, so
sure. You asked a question, you know, like talking here about wanting to get our coaches' feedback from the national coaches. So my question to you is, from where you sit, to get from the D1AA level to the D1A level, is it a coaching problem or is it like administration / organization problems? Which one?
I think it's a recruiting and a funding problem. So it's not wholly one or the other. I think one, you need the depth to be able to play and compete amongst yourselves at training and do those things well. So in order to do that, you need a well-organized coach that is capable, but you also need a coach that's appropriately resourced and has things accessible to them, which means you need a strong alumni network, right? Like the teams that can play D1A and are able to travel, they sort of have rosters of between, and this is a very Aussie term, but it's called drop power, the ability to select based on performance, right? And they travel with two teams to all of their locations, and a lot of them have a third team that plays locally against other teams. That level of organization is what I think it takes to thrive at the D1A level, and that requires, you know, strong off-field support from alumni. So that means a really well-organized alumni support network that helps with fundraising and being able to do travel. Obviously, the university assistance is nice to have, but it's one of those things that you can't ever sort of guarantee if you're a club sport. And then a strong coach that understands how to manage not only a coaching staff, but also a network of coaches that can develop the players and bring them along over a 3 to 4 year cycle, and make sure that you're always sustaining your playmakers as you need them throughout the course of the year.
Yeah, I mean, having a coaching staff is super helpful. I mean, I forgot, what is Chris's last name at Cal Poly? Slow.
Chris O'Brien.
Yeah, he's by himself, which I don't understand how he does it. And he has 70 players coming out. He does have three teams. I don't understand how the hell he does it. But yeah, most of them do have staffs. So,
yeah.
So is there anything in the works from USA Rugby or CRAA as far as administration development, organizational development, best practices to be following, how to develop your alumni base, you know, like best practices about how much money you need to be having, any of that type of stuff coming down the pike?
I think the answer is some of it will be. It will fall on my shoulders, so it'll be leaning into different networks. So once again, from a D1AA perspective, what do you guys need, and then see what we can develop from there. Obviously, with my background at where I was at Stanford, I understand a little bit more about the endowments and I can answer a lot of those questions off the top of my head. Some of the other ones, I would probably need to do some research and sort of solicit the best practices amongst the D1A coaches, specifically those on the West Coast and in Rugby East. They are developing communities of practice that are really strong, and they're sharing information amongst the coaching staffs. And I think that's a step that we want to be able to take, is be able to create these communities of practice amongst the coaches. So they're able to access sort of knowledge, offhand knowledge, to make sure that you have someone you can ask your questions off, if that makes sense. And someone who's been successful at it, what do they do? How do they do it? How can I leverage that in my own space?
There's a question here from Rick, the FRU president, who I guess not able to talk. He asked the question, how important is it to have someone with the rugby team at the school paid in order to successfully manage large numbers of players? So to me, the nuance in that question is school paid versus maybe outside alumni paid. But
yeah, I think a paid person, regardless of
school affiliation,
a heavily invested person, right? I don't think they have to be paid by the school. I think if they are paid by through the school, it makes it more seamless, right? Because, and the reason I say that is because any donations that go to the rugby program that help pay that coach's salary also generally fall into an endowment or the expendable fund, and all of your alumni then get credit for giving to the university, which is a way to build cachet. That's what Stanford did. Everything goes into the university endowment or into an expendable fund, and so all the rugby donors get full credit for all the money that they've given to Stanford. That's the benefit of doing it through the school. The benefit of doing an alumni one is there's more autonomy, there's more ability for the alumni to hire and fire, which can be useful. I would say having someone who can focus on building the program is most important, whether that's an independently wealthy person who doesn't need the money, or you find some other way to pay them, right? All three of those methods exist in D1A. And, you know, they have successful people at it.
Follow-up question here. Is any D1A program, is any head coach at a D1A program a volunteer?
Yes, Tim O'Brien is.
At St. Mary's.
Yep. But once again, he's been doing it for a long time. There are volunteer coaches. There are stipend coaches that receive, I don't know, $5,000 to $10,000.
Can you count on more than one hand how many D1A coaches are volunteers?
Yeah, not enough.
Head coaches?
Probably not.
Okay. So you got the outlier of Tim. The other outlier is Chris O'Brien, his brother. So like the O'Brien brothers, I don't know what the hell is going on in that family, but they should bottle it, sell it. Okay. Anybody else?
But even the majority of D1AA programs now are starting to build what I'll call that war chest to be able to support coaches and sort of be able to play matches wherever you need to.
Interesting. How many people in Florida have a war chest? Put your hand up.
We're getting there. Trying to get there.
We built one, but we're spending it all.
Is that a question, Diego, or are you just putting your hand up because I said something? Anybody else questions? We're here at four. We're an hour in, so we're going to be wrapping this up here shortly.
Yep, got one.
Alaska.
Yeah, Josh, I wanted to touch back to your question. We touched on some good things there with, you know, high level players getting opportunities higher level. We talked about, you know, this fall thing where you're sending a team that, you know, can get some exposure to play against another team. We're talking about a select side type of thing that could develop. We're talking about Miami, MLR opportunities, you know, stuff like that. So if you were, you know, in our shoes as a coach here, and, you know, I think the Miami MLR is the most clear-cut one, right? So say, for instance, my team's not good enough to go and play in those bowl games, or, you know, if the select side thing does develop, that's another clear route, right? But if you were here where we are and you wanted to get a high level player, an immediate, you know, like as good of an opportunity as possible, is there something else out there that we haven't mentioned or talked about that you would point to say, do this, go that direction?
So the first thing I would be doing is clipping the highest level video that you can and be able to submit that to national team pathway coaches, which they all accept film. And that would be another route that you could go. One of the benefits, and this is one of the reasons why we're trying to build this connection for you all to hear from the national team coaches themselves, is so they actually start to recognize you as one of the CRAA coaches, someone who's invested in their own growth and development, because they see you on these calls and, you know, that's one of the reasons why we're doing this. And then they do watch these bowl games. They do watch the other things and just making sure that you do that, but clipping up. And when I say clipping, sending someone highlights, just highlights no one can tell what they are, what type of player they are, by just sending highlights. You've got to show them the things that they do well or the things that you believe are their strengths, right? Like if this is a flanker and all you do is show them making tackles, but you never show a ball carry or a clear out or any of those things, a pathway coach can get an idea of their athleticism, but that's about it. So you, when you clip them, you actually need to show the type of player they are, what skills, what strengths they bring to the table. And you want to make sure their measurables actually measure up to what an international player, you know, should be doing at that level. So if it's at under 20s level, obviously they'll be a little bit lighter, but they won't be shorter than an international player. Once they get up into those older age groups, you want to make sure that they carry the size or they carry the explosivity that a coach would be looking for.
The biggest thing we want to make sure from the D1AA coaches is that if there is some really good talent, they don't slip through the nets, basically, right?
Yeah, 100%. We want to make sure that the best talent gets on the field wherever they went to school. And, you know, like I know there are guys who've come into camp for the men's sevens teams from D1AA programs. I know there are guys who picked up at MLR Rising and those things from D1AA programs. And part of that is making sure that you have the information, sort of the data points that you have, but also the good film. And people will select from everywhere.
So the MLR Rising that just took place, that was like the top 50 players or 50 players or whatever were select. How many were D1AA?
Yeah. I don't know off the top of my head for this group. I know that last year's, which was a slightly different format, there were like six players from D1AA. I did not get the information about MLRizing this one. I got stuck doing something with the women's under 20. So I don't have that information off the top of my head. I will find out for you though.
And then for the MLRizing, is that the, like the collegiate selectors putting those kids up, or is that MLR doing it themselves? How are they selected?
There's a submission form on the MLR website, and then it sort of gets passed through by the group of coaches. And also I think there is some GM input as well on that. And so they try and work together to make sure that all those things get taken into account. And so there is a submission process for it.
As far as the D1AA Sevens Championship, if the ACR group decides they want to go do one on their own, there's a potential for that happening also on the last weekend of there's at that the conversation we had a couple weeks back. They were debating about whether to do the sevens championship first or the 15s championship first. There's maybe doing the, you know, 15s championship in conjunction with CRAA championship weekend and then doing a sevens championship, what, 2 weeks later, similar to the timing of this year?
Yep. If the D1AA commissioners decide that they want to do that, then we will talk about the budget cost for it and make sure that that's something that can be covered. And then we would select a location that the time would be the middle of May. So for a lot of the semester schools, it would be post graduation and end of school.
That's for the, if D1AA decided to do it on their own, as opposed to yes, operating within CRAA, if they do it as a championship weekend, all in one, there could be two divisions and the second division will like largely be populated by D1AA schools.
That's correct.
So, when teams and players register, right, you get $15 per player registration and then $400 team fee, all that money goes in to the CRAA pot. Majority of it is spent probably on championship and on event weekends, which benefit just a few handful of teams. Whereas, you know, you have to earn the right to get there, no big deal. But then the rest of it, as far as supporting the rest of the programs, other than eligibility and the operational stuff, is there anything else that's coming down the pike that can like make sure it benefits everybody or all those stuff we're talking about, coordinate with national coaches, is all that free? Or are we paying for any services? Or is anything coming down the pike that's looking to help administratively?
That would, all those things we're doing as services to CRAA members. And if we can, I don't want to promise camps. It's something we've talked about, but logistically, from a human resource perspective, it's much harder to pull off, right? These coaches are on the road as it is, getting them to be on the road, you know, to every conference in every area of the country is probably not a possibility for us. But we want to bring those. We, if there is a need for administrative support, looking to make those connections or create those webinars or whatever those happen to be, obviously we need to hear what you need in those situations to make sure that we actually help create things that are positive for you, not just things we think you need, because that's a waste of time for everyone. So, yes, if there are things that you need, we do want to provide those resources and those connection points. We want to see all the teams grow and make sure it's not just the top teams that get all the benefit from everyone working together.
Will the $400 team fees be sent out in September or early August?
It'll be
August
on the
year?
RX. It'll all be through RX.
So when you do your team registration beginning of the year, you'll have to pay your $400. Then when you have to do your $54, whatever it is, $50 and change team registration on Rugby Explorer, all that at the same time?
Yes. Yep.
So clubs need to have $450, $460 in the bank to pay for their registration, and then they can submit that for reimbursement to their universities.
Correct.
$414, gents. Last chance.
How many D1AA teams are there?
I'm doing quick math off the top of my head. There's... Sorry, I don't have that number in front of me. There's the Northwest Rugby Conference.
If you were at a computer, Josh, you'd have these numbers, but you're traveling, so you don't have your computer in front of you, so you don't have it right this moment.
It's like 45 teams, I think, is the number.
And then just quick follow-up, like how many of those D1AA conferences are east of the Mississippi?
Zero.
Okay.
On the
and just so you know, there is movement in other places. Sorry, the Mid-America conference, we're trying to make sure that we stay responsive to their needs as well. And there's creation of hybrid conferences. There is movement in Rugby East as well. To different teams are moving around. So I'm saying that because there's a lot of moving pieces at the moment. And it's sort of an active situation.
So at that meeting, you guys did bring up the hybrid conference thing. You and Paul Santinelli talked about it quite a bit. I'm really interested to understand the rationale of it. To me, hybrid conferences, really, you're going to do this at the benefit for the D1A teams that are geographically isolated, right? When you just made this comment that you want to make sure that the benefit of being a CRAA is not just at the top, but for everybody. But then if you're going with these hybrid conferences, to me, the hybrid conference is really for the geographically isolated D1A team so they can get more competition. Like, what is the rationale of having hybrid teams if what you need to do is have, parity in the conference?
So the goal with the hybrid conference is that the D1A teams send – appropriately matched sides.
You have different playoff pathways. So you have a hybrid conference. One team will go in one pathway. One team will go in the other. But you still have the conference championship to deal with.
Yes, you do. Well, potentially you don't. Like, there are different models of hybrid conferences that are being discussed. What Shane's doing in Lone Star, he tiers all three out and he puts the teams in those tiers and they change every year based on their previous year's schedule. And so in Florida, you might have to have a Florida championship, or you say, you know, a D1A team doesn't play for that championship in the Florida conference, only the D1AA teams.
there are all different permutations in California, the hybrid conference. They have a D1A champion and they have a D1AA champion, but they have a collegial relationship to be able to play more games against appropriate competition. And that way the players get more competitive games where they see different teams, where they see different styles of play, and the player development return has been really big for those teams. So that's the benefit of the hybrid conference for the D1AA teams, is to be able to get to play different styles of play. And I would say probably players that are aspiring to play that have a slightly better system, and they and then you get to play against sort of teams that are coached at a very high level. You play their lesser players, but you get to test your system against other people.
Allegedly, they're lesser players. I'd like to see a D1A team put out a product that they don't have 100% faith is going to win.
I mean, that's been my experience when I played.
I can tell you where that happens. Santa Clara this year put out a lesser team and lost to Stanford, right? Based on the coaches having a conversation together. So, but you're also right. Like, D1A doesn't want to lose to a D1AA team, but it's a way to test yourself competitively.
So D1A has an algorithm for their rankings. So if D1AA went to a, let's say, no pathways whatsoever, just all bowl games, and your ranking was based on your algorithm and their algorithm is based on strength of schedule, then I can understand how hybrid conferences could really benefit both D1A and D1AA. But until you get to that situation where both are operating at algorithms, I don't understand how this is really, I don't know. I'd be interested to see how this goes. I think they'll work.
And in California, for the first, it's worked really well.
I think they'll work for the first year or two. I'm really interested to see how they work in year five.
I'm interested to see how they affect Florida at all, because, you know, the closest one is life. I'd be more interested in CRA actively, aggressively going after the SCRC and bringing in teams that are geographically closer to us under our umbrella.
Yeah, so would I. And we can talk about that offline.
I mean, obviously, we're going to have that situation here shortly with St. Thomas, because they are developing incredibly fast. And they're going to outrun this competition, the rest of the competition, very quickly if they haven't already done so. So, yeah, we're going to have the situation here where that's going to have a problem. What's the plan to... Yeah, is there any policies, or is it all best practices?
What do you mean by that, Kirk?
Well, policies is something that you can enforce. Best practice is not. You play your lesser teams. Is that a best practice, or is that a policy?
It would be a best practice right now, but we develop this, they'll turn into policies.
Are you going to change up the D1A algorithm where when there's a crossover game, if the less starting 15 players they have, the more it matters?
That is a suggestion that I have not heard before, but there are adjustments to the algorithm that has been suggested in this pathway. Not that specific one, but yes, it has been suggested.
All right. Last chance, gents. We're about to hang it up.
And just so you know, guys, we've had teams approach us from sort of the North Atlanta and other places to come into D1. And so we are working with those teams. I don't want to speak out of turn before anything happens, but it's not something that we're oblivious. It's just not something that happens. We can announce it.
You're breaking up there quite badly, Josh, but... Peter?
Yeah, I just want to give a few more like a perspective more along the player and logistics line of talking about bowl games and talking about, you know, an all-star type roster. An all-star type roster would be, at least for the teams, in my perspective, and for our team, much easier to organize because, you know, an out-of-state travel, it takes a lot of planning for a whole team. And it's a whole production, especially for our team. We don't get funding for travel at all. I assume it's the same with a lot of other Florida teams. So we need to start making sure we have that funding a long time out with, you know, sending 3 to 5 players to an all-star type team. That seems to me a much more achievable goal and a way to get those players seen by a higher level and not necessarily needing that entire production of out-of-state travel. That's not to say that, you know, our team doesn't want to play bowl games. We would love to, and we want to, but especially for something like the fall, which is going to be on most likely shorter notice than something in the spring, it seems to me a lot easier to make for the fall an all-star game achievable for the teams than it would be for a bowl game.
Great points, Peter. I think this is a conversation we can have internally here in the conference. We don't really need to suck up Josh's time for that. Basically what he's wanting for us is what do we want as a conference at that, you know, there's an opportunity here at the Fall Classic if teams want to go up or if we want to send a all-star team. So if collectively we want to send an all-star team, we can do that, but let's continue that later. Josh, we're a minute, you know, hour 23 in. Anything else? Are you back? Is your audio doing better?
Yeah, no, hopefully my audio is doing better. Sorry. I'm just about to go into the airport to catch a plane ride home.
Great. Perfect timing.
I appreciate everything. Guys, if you need my phone number, get it off Kirk. You're allowed to bug me. You can call me. And yes, I know what I'm asking for. And no, my wife doesn't like it. So, you know, but feel free to reach out and I'll answer as many questions as I can.
Josh used to be the coach at Stanford. He's recently relocated up to Tennessee, I believe outside of Nashville. And so he is completely unaffiliated with anybody. So a lot of times people don't know or have crazy suspicions about people. Josh is only working for the benefit of all college programs in the U.S. So really appreciate your time, Josh. Thank you very much for all your insight and open and honest conversation. I always appreciate those. Guys, if you have any questions, feel free to reach out to him or myself. Thanks so much for your time. Josh, you go ahead and jump off, and I'll wrap it up here with the boys. Any closing comments, gents, or questions, comments, concerns?
No, I think that was helpful, Kirk. It was good to hear his perspective and hear him get, you know, a few challenges from our side as well. So interesting to see how the season goes and the next couple of years go. Yeah, if we decide to stay.
I can't wait to hear Pat Clifton's pitch.
Yeah, I was supposed to have a podcast or have a conversation with him a couple weeks or 2 weeks ago, but something came up. We weren't be able to do it, but I have it rescheduled for tomorrow. I only have an hour on the books alone, so we'll see what we get through. Yeah. I'm just not sure how it's going to work out seasonality-wise, but yeah, I really appreciate Josh coming on. Anybody got questions, comments?
When do we think we'll see a schedule?
I have my draft. I've submitted it to Ash. We're just now waiting on, there's a big concerted effort from the union to consolidate not just the college men, but the college men, the college women, the men, like trying to consolidate all the schedules as much as possible. So that way we actually have matches happening in the same state or sorry, in the same city on the same weekends, blah, blah, blah. So that scheduling conversation is supposed to occur. Sometime soon. It should have happened already, but a couple weeks. So yeah, question. So the comment there about the Fall Classic. Do you guys want to? You guys rather put up an all-star team to go up there, a representative team? Sorry. Rep team to go up, or are we going to look at individual teams wanting to go, or both, one or the other?
If I had known about it a little earlier, I would have put our hand up, but we We've kind of already booked our travel, so I'd be very much more open to a representative team. I think that'd be cool.
I definitely think we'd show some interest in going up there for a bowl style game, but also love the idea of a rep team as well.
You guys can probably do both, Diego.
Yeah. I also think that for a rep team for the state of Florida would be super important. I think it's a really good idea.
No, I think it's actually really valuable because you actually get the players on the same team. And so when they do play each other, I think it helps mitigate some of the bad blood and bitching and moaning and stuff that occurs. So I actually think it's an important tool that we're missing and we need to bring it back.
And it'll give a level of another thing to aspire to for these players as well. Like okay, I want to get on that team as well, and up their performance and maybe their want to watch more rugby and learn more about the game and do a bit more, that helps l raise the level of competition in the state.
How many of you guys do fitness tests, standardized fitness tests throughout the beginning and throughout the season?
We do.
We definitely do.
Hopefully all of us.
What are you guys doing? What type of tests, what type of standardized testing are you guys doing?
The
Because then
most
we could,
obvious, I mean, the most
yeah.
obvious thing we do is a mile, then we do the Bronco, and then we get your traditional lift numbers, bench, squat, deadlift.
Yeah, we do. We'll do a 40, a vertical jump, broad jump, back squat, power clean, bench press, metrics, and Bronco time. Yeah, and then we continue. We throughout the whole year, we're looking at their numbers, which way they're going.
Yeah, because I mean, if we're gonna sit here and talk about like aspiring. I mean, we took that team up to New Orleans to go play, and I mean, it was good. I don't think these like rep teams, there's not real much coaching that's gonna go on. Really, you're just selecting and putting people in the park and trying to get as cohesive a team as quickly as possible. The coaching really happens in the daily training environments at your guys' clubs. So, the rep team, it's just an opportunity to get to assemble the best players, hopefully the best players in the state, and go play someone else and have a new opportunity. But having some standardized fitness tests that we do share, I would just guess a Bronco, the number of push-ups that you can do in a minute, like what is it? What is the low tech answers that we can provide here, or low tech tests that people can do at a training very quickly where it doesn't eat up a bunch of time, right? Because like no one has time to spare at training, right? Every minute that you guys are out there, I'm sure you guys are planning every second of it. So, what's like the low tech solutions that we can provide that we can then maybe share league wide that'll really help us with this, rep team?
So we actually used at the beginning of last year, we used you can just look it up on Google. It's the All-American fitness test. That is, it's really, really basic. It's push-ups, plank, Bronco, and I think and a shuttle, I believe. And there may be one or two other things else, but and it's got all broken down based on like how you should do it, but you don't need anything for that, just a stopwatch. I think it's 90 seconds per thing, but that was one that we used that I think is a really good, like just like really easy thing to do without needing anything, and you can get it done quick.
Yeah, because I believe they have those stats for not just all Americans, but the Eagles and the MLR guys as well, maybe. So I'll have a chat here tomorrow with Pat. I'll submit put that out for you guys to listen to. So that'll be basically NCR's pitch. And then, talk amongst yourselves, guys, like figure out what you guys want to do moving forward. Are we staying with CRAA? We're switching over to NCR. We're going totally independent. You know, we have all the options on the table here. So, I don't know. You guys tell me what you guys want to do. There's no more closing comments. We will shut it down. All right, 90 minutes in. Appreciate everyone's time. You guys enjoy the rest of your time. We have another meeting scheduled in a month from now, and Todd from Quick Cut's going to be on it. So if you got questions about that, make sure you're on that call to ask those questions to Todd. Guys, have a great day. Enjoy. Take it easy.
Thanks, Bryce.
Thanks, Kurt. Thanks for getting us off.